All right, it's time for the Seychelles. And as promised, we're doing it in an upbeat podcast. Seychelles is one of the least populated nations we've covered, but not without well-known regard for the beauty of their islands. Friendly reminder, Seychelles were chosen not because of recent news events, but because of their flag, which I see as very joyous and upbeat, but we'll get into the flag and more after the intro and a word from Anchor. It's Citizen Cork, where we used to say no country was more or less important than any other country, and we used a random generator. But it's a new show. We now source from countries in the news to help you get to relevant information faster. So, Citizen Cork, where no country is more or less important than another country. You're just in or not in the news.
And so before we dive in, we're going to have a word from our sponsor, because it is sort of fun to get paid some amount of money for this, and we'll be back after that.
All right, let's dive into the Seychelles. The Seychelles are an archipelago nation of 115 islands in the Indian Ocean. And incidentally, it works really well to do the Seychelles after Ethiopia, because if you remember in Ethiopia, there's a point. It points out and up to the Arabian Peninsula, right? And again, remember that point is not in Ethiopia, it's Somalia. Now imagine you drew a line from the point of Somalia, right? Which is like the furthest east continental on Africa, right? To the right, if north is up. And you drew a line down to that very large island you see off the right-hand side of Africa, the eastern coast, which is Madagascar. The core of the archipelago would be to just right of that line, about exactly halfway between that point, that tip of Somalia, and the tip of Madagascar. Some of the islands in the archipelago are actually closer to Madagascar than they are to the core group of islands. And the Seychelles is considered part of Africa. To get to the Seychelles, which means flying to Mahé, by the way, their largest island and most populated island, takes about a day and is not a direct flight from the US, New York airports. The flag of the Seychelles, which is what got us here in the first place, is not the easiest to explain because it's not either horizontal or vertical blocks. The flag for the Seychelles is four triangles and one quadrilateral. So imagine you're back in geometry class. Okay. So imagine a flag that is 3 units tall by 6 units wide. On the math side, there is a blue triangle it's a right triangle, with the right hand square being in the top math side corner. The blue triangle is 3 units tall, so the entire height, and 1/3, 2 units wide of the total flag, and no units wide at the bottom. All of the color blocks all connect at this bottom mass side, left side of the flag corner. This right triangle is followed by an obtuse triangle of yellow, which is another 2 units wide across the top and no units wide across the bottom. And the next color is red, and red is the quadrilateral. The red is the final 2 wide at the top, and it's 1 unit tall on the right side. So it has a side on the top, a side on the side. It has then 2 diagonal sides stretching from, again, that bottom left corner. Under the red is a white triangle, not a right triangle, a white triangle. That is the middle unit of the height on the far side of the flag, and again, stretching to that corner. And the white is followed by a green triangle, which is the whole width of the bottom of the flag and 1 unit tall. So it's 5 blocks of color all connecting in the bottom left. And it's kind of basically the way we would look at it on mass side, pointing upwards, joyous shots of color. The flag for me is not only joyous, it also for some reason is reminiscent of the album art on Franz Ferdinand's You Could Have It So Much Better album, which for some reason also brings me a strange amount of joy. I like to say in looking at this, like if I were going to describe it, it's like a happy little jumbled rainbow, because it's not in rainbow order, jumped out of some canister all at once and landed on this rectangle. As for the symbology, blue is the sky and is at the top. Yellow is for the sun, which is important for life. Red symbolizes the people and work. Red is followed by the white, which is meant to stand for social justice and harmony, followed by green, which is land and environment. Red and white are the only two colors that have been constantly in the flag of the Seychelles since the first flag when it was part of the British Empire in 1903. The Seychelles today has a population of just under 99,000 people, which makes them less than 20% of the population of Wyoming, the least populated U.S. state, or a little larger than the U.S. Virgin Islands. The three most inhabited islands are Armagh, Praslin, and Ladigue. About half of the islands are not populated, and only 13 islands out of 115 have a population of 100 or more people. 95,000 of the 99,000 live on Mahé. My French was never great. And while I said it was a British colony, we'll get into that. The total land area of the Seychelles is 176 square miles, or a half marathon aside. And again, for land area, they're just a bit larger than the U.S. Virgin Islands, which has a land area of 134 square miles. Victoria, named for Queen Victoria, is the capital and is on Mahé. A little over 25% of the population, at around 27,000 people, projected off the 2010 census, live there. 27,000 people is about the size of Winter Haven, Florida, which has been chosen because of all the cities roughly with this population. The home of Legoland, Florida, seemed most likely to resonate. But if Legoland doesn't resonate, it's about the same size as Newport, Rhode Island. So for those more interested in America's Gilded Age, or if neither of those work, it's just smaller than Pocho. You don't know what Pocho is? That reference wasn't for you anyways. What might be one of the most interesting things about the Seychelles is that the islands had no indigenous population. So it worked out really nicely to do the Seychelles as a happy-go-lucky story, because while colonialism plays a part here, there were no indigenous people, and so it's not a subversion of a whole population, which of all the places in the British Empire would be basically the only one. The Seychelles were actually first seen and mapped by societies off the Persian Gulf in the 700s Common Era, but then left for almost a millennia to no societies' maps. The Portuguese, Vasco da Gama, one of their most famous explorers, was the first European to map the islands. But he did not stop there, nor did any Portuguese land on the islands at any point in the 1500s. To take a quick pause, the Portuguese did some of the first landings in some of the biggest countries today out of all the Europeans. But because of a variety of different forces, Portugal didn't become the power the French, Brits, Dutch, or Russians became. And so I think is sort of overlooked in some of the colonial allocation of blame, which is not fair, right? They went everywhere in the 1500s, but they didn't stop in the Seychelles. In the 1600s, 1609, to be precise, the British East India Company lands, kind of walks around a few islands, gets back in their boats, goes. And the archipelago doesn't become properly explored until the French travel through in 1742 and 1744. Think about this. That makes the Seychelles younger than America, pretty substantially, really. We're coming off podcasts about two different countries that are in cradles of civilization. And here we are doing one of our youngest nations. All right, so 1742, 1744, they sail through, they map it out more, they really get a feel for it. In 1756, these islands are annexed to France. However, this annexation is short-lived in that the French and British are basically always fighting. And in 1810, they were fighting, settled fighting, and ratified their peace in the Treaty of Paris in 1814, and the islands are ceded to Great Britain. Now, what's really interesting here is that the islands had basically one form of agriculture under the French, and then in the early period under the British, which was cotton. And the Brits and slavery in the 1830s, which means that the kind of the industry of Seychelles changes from an agricultural perspective to less labor-intensive crops, which I think is a really interesting ramification to this island, because again, they weren't populated, well, islands, but really just a few at this point are populated, but they weren't populated beforehand. There's no indigenous population. And so only the people brought by boat, either willingly or unwillingly, live there. So in terms of labor, it really was just slave labor, which is, of course, atrocious. And we won't dive into that because this is the upbeat podcast. But it is a really interesting outcome that you don't see so drastically anywhere else in the British Empire. And it's just, again, because there were no other people there. So, friendly reminder, by the way, obviously, if you know your US history at all, then you're aware Britain abolished slavery voluntarily and before the US by decades. And also, just because we're in the middle of a real wonderful news cycle of good versus bad, US versus Russia. Russia got rid of slavery also voluntarily before the US. So I'm not a fan of Putin, but let's be a little less into the dichotomy of good versus evil and also back on topic. It's amazing how quickly an upbeat podcast can really go sideways, but I'm not going to let it. So the British Empire holds onto the nations as an independent colony as a dependency of Mauritius between 1814 and 1903. In 1903, it becomes an independent colony, right? So its own. That's why it gets its first flag at that point. And there was no actual local government or self-representation on the islands until 1948. This is not when they gain independence. They gain independence in 1976 after being granted self-government, which is very generous of the Queen, don't we all think? Not maybe as generous as letting Camilla be called Queen Camilla, but it's got to be up there, letting people have their own government. I'm not, please note, going to get into the Queen's generous donation on behalf of her son, Andrew, because we are staying upbeat. Here we are. Travel to the islands actually picks up in 1963. The start of their tourism industry starts after that because the U.S. leases land on Mahé for a Air Force satellite tracking station, which brought weekly flights to the island for the first time. So unfortunately, the history is not without some dark times. But again, we're going to try and stay at a level that keeps us not going into a total slog. So the history of the government is tried and true story of elections without meaningful term limits, which there are now. In 1975, the first government is formed in preparation for their independence, and it's a coalition government between James Mansham of the Seychelles Democratic Party, SPUD, SPD, and their flag does not have an image of a potato, which really feels like a lost branding opportunity. And his vice president is France Albert René of the People's United Party, or PUP, and they missed the opportunity to put a super cute puppy on their flag. Mansham goes off in 1977, so 2 years after coming into office, to attend the Commonwealth Conference in London. And while he's gone, he's deposed in a bloodless coup, which, like, if I were going to be deposed, I would love to be deposed when I'm not in the country. Mr. Mansham had basically been portrayed as a British puppet, and he's very pro continuing to have very close relationships with Britain, and that is not untrue. However, it doesn't appear to be super mutual, because in his attempt to get Western intervention into uncooing the coup, he insists that there was Soviet intervention, which, to the credit of the New York Times, was reported to be without any evidence. And I say to the credit of the New York Times because I'm not sure that I think we would make that point today. Journalistic standards. So René's coup leads to his presidency, which lasts between 1977 and 2004. If you're doing a little bit of math, yeah, he had a very long presidency. It doesn't feel very presidential at all. And basically, René, until the very nearly the end of his life, he dies in 2019, got away with being seen as a benevolent dictator. And this all comes to an end because the current president is the first president since Mansham and the start of the government to not be from the Socialist Party. So the current president in 2018 sets up a commission to review the truth of his legacy in that government. And the reality is that France Albert René ruled through a reliance on violence and intimidation, including the silencing of dissidents by murder and torture, alleged murder and torture. You can watch really moving and terrifying testimonial on YouTube, but it's not a good idea if you're trying to stay in the bright, happy spot. But before the commission, he was seen as a benevolent dictator because, as compared to island nations nearby, and most of Africa, Seychelles had really low infant mortality rates, really high life expectancy, which islands like the Maldives are only now achieving, and a strong primary and secondary education system. The life expectancy in the Seychelles is just under 74 years, which is really very high. And it has been about 74 years for about four decades, right? Which is taking us back to the start of Rene's term. In addition to the public health improvements that were put in, he also had a strong belief in primary and secondary education system and a really strong education system in general. And part of this is because he also tried to have forced curriculum and mandatory service basically in the Socialist Party and training by the Socialist Party as part of the education system. So Rene is running into kind of an inertia meets the force that will overcome that problem. And he steps down from his presidency in 2004. His vice president takes over the term, James Michel, and takes office from 2004 to 2016. So he actually does something really interesting, James Michel, in that he's completed now two terms, right? That would have taken him right through to 2016, but he actually in 2015 calls an early election. And he doesn't win outright, which is the first time there's no outright winning. And in the second time, he wins by a very narrow, right? After they do the runoff, he wins by a very narrow margin. And there's basically widespread charges of voting irregularity, and there are suits filed. So he actually then chooses to step down in 2016. He would have otherwise served three terms, which incidentally, after securing his third term through voting irregularity, he encourages change in the law such that in 2016, spring of 2016, the parliament voted to limit presidents to two terms. Two terms of 5 years, 10 years in total. Michel's vice president, Danny Foy, who was vice president from 2010 to 2016, took over and served only the fulfillment of Michel's term. In 2020, for the first time since the coup, the president of the Seychelles was not from the Socialist Party. Wawel Ram Kalawan is from the Linyan Democratic Seselwa Party, which is the core democratic party. Parties had actually stopped between 1977 and 1992. And when I say parties had stopped, that might be for those people who were not having a good time under Rene's leadership, literal in that most obvious sense. And then in the way it's been here is the Socialist Party wipes out all other parties between 1977 and 1992. In trying to bring legitimacy to the presidency, they reallow multiple parties in 1992. Ram Kalawan has been the leader of that party since its inception, 1992, and served as the opposition MP from 1993 to 2011. And from 2016 to 2020, and in 2020, he becomes president. He is sometimes, by the way, incorrectly referred to as an evangelical. And he's incorrectly referred to as an evangelical in that he is not an evangelical, but he was, until his movement into politics, a Catholic priest. And this is, I think, one of the interesting little tidbits. The Seychelles, despite being a British colony from 1814 till 1975, are 3/4 Catholic and only about 6% Anglican. So basically that French duration between 1756 and 1814, cements a Catholicism that is not abated by British Empire and only 6% Anglican. The Seychelles, until COVID, had a growing economy. A fiscal deficit was concerning to people, but a growing economy. Unfortunately, the reliance on tourism and service took that growth away, and actually the economy shrank by 12% in 2020. It has come back significantly in 2021. The Seychelles have the highest GDP per capita of any African nation at $11,000. $11,000 puts them in the middle quartile for all nations, somewhere in the 70s. I say somewhere in the 70s, by the way, because it depends on whose source for GDP you take. There's the IMF, there's World Bank, there are others. Right. So depending on this, right. So they're somewhere in the 70s or the second quartile. All states in the US have total GDPs above the 1.6 billion GDP of the Seychelles. However, the gap on GDP per capita shrinks comparatively. GDP in total is 1/10 the lowest GDP per state. However, the GDP per capita per state shrinks to 1/3 Mississippi's. GDP per capita is the lowest in the US in Mississippi at $35,000 a year. So that, I think, again, underscores like a key takeaway in the Seychelles is they are very sparsely populated. Both the islands in total, only 50% have anyone at all on them. And in a collective, they are still a very, very small population. So wrapping this episode on some more high notes, unsurprisingly, with a population so small, they have few celebrities outside of their long-serving politicians. They are home to beautiful islands. And if you're willing to travel 24 hours from New York airports, or if you live in Europe, it might be, or India, it might be a perfect vacation spot. And if you're not so into people, it's a really great place to vacay with some privacy. Actually, if it were closer, I think it'd be a great place to vacation. I am not a 24 hours in a plane person though. So in addition to the obvious beauty of all these islands, there is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, which is the Atoll of Aldabra, which is home to the highest population of giant tortoises in the world. And because of its UNESCO World Heritage Site, still in reasonably pristine condition. And by the way, an atoll is a ring-shaped reef, which creates a really interesting connected but separated biological niche. And that wraps the first ever positively net positive episode of Citizen Cork. Back next time with Lebanon, which will be assuredly less upbeat. Get excited, not get excited. Stay healthy, stay well. See you next time.